Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Indianapolis, Indiana, welcome to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show, presented by Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Crossroads Sports Radio, episode number 119. I am your host, Brandon Reif. Thank you for joining us. Today is June 17th, another glorious day here in the city of Indianapolis. We've got a packed show for you this evening, packed show. We've got some NBA talk. We've got MLB talk. Are they coming back? Are they not coming back? We've got NFL news, a little bit of NCAA news, muddying the water a little bit, and we're going to be talking some golf and a little bit about some quick hitters, and we're going to be recapping a little bit of our Jonathan's interview that was posted this afternoon with NBA former River Plate player Craig Hodges. So Jonathan will be joining us there. We also have a huge, huge interview here at 6:30, the bottom of the hour, with Ball State's head golf coach, Coach Mike Fleck. It should be a great interview with Coach there. He's been there forever. He's been there since the early 90s, so we're going to talk to him. We're going to talk about the Ball State golf team themselves as a program, as well as the sport of golf coming back. But my main man, Jonathan Birdsong, has joined us. JB, how are you, buddy?
Doing all right, man. Good afternoon to you, Brandon, and to the Crossroads family. Let's listen on this, man. It's good to be back on.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to have you back, JB, as always. John, today in history is a very, very important day. 26 okay. years ago, on June 17th, everything you could think of sports world related possibly happened. And for people that haven't seen the Facebook page or anything about that, let me just recap a little bit of it. Arnold Palmer, the famous world golfer, his last round in the U.S. Open was on that day, that Sunday. The New York Rangers were doing their ticker tape parade for winning the Stanley Cup for the first time in 53 years. The United States hosted their very first World Cup soccer in Los Angeles. Not Los Angeles, excuse me, take that back. Ken Griffey Jr. was the first player to hit, to hit and tie Babe Ruth's home run record before June 30th for 9 home runs. Now, as you know, the baseball went on strike that year, later on that year, so we didn't get to see much. That was also the Rockets and Knicks game 4 of the NBA Finals. But also, John, it was the OJ chase. And I remember where I was that year when I was 12 years old. Let me see here. No, 9 years old. And watching the NBA and the TV flipping from the NBA to seeing a white Bronco getting chased down the interstate by Los Angeles LAPD. So a lot of things happened on this date 26 years ago.
And, man, and even still, here we are in this. It's still monumental times. You know what I'm saying? Maybe not as you know, kinetic as, or chaotic as that, but, yes, still monumental times, yes.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. So, yeah, we've got a big show this evening. NBA, a little MLB talk, some NFL, and then we have the huge interview with Ball State head golf coach Mike Fleck. Going to be a great interview. We're going to talk a little bit of golf, a little bit of Ball State program. And I'm going to need some tips. I've got to get the ball to stay on the green a little bit. I had a great round today. I drove the ball my best. And now I'm not the world's greatest golfer. People that know me already know this. I had my very first today non-wind aided 300-yard drive today. So I was ecstatic to have that. So played well today. So, Coach Fleck, if you're listening already, I'm going to have some pointers you're going to need to give me.
I'm sure.
So, all right. Yeah, absolutely. So, John, first off, I want to talk the return of sports. SportsCenter aired the other night a return of sports special where they had commissioners on from all leagues. They had players from different leagues. They also talked social injustices and stuff. They had the MLB commissioner, and obviously he took some grief for what he said. It's a disaster is what he called MLB at that point. NHL, they had Gary Bettman. Gary Bettman seemed very positive in kind of what they were going to do to bring back their sport. And they had the NBA commissioner on there. And then they also had Dame Lillard. Dame Lillard, I don't even think, cares to play, whether it be the social injustices going on or the fact that Portland's not that good, and they should be. But he just doesn't seem like he wants to play down there. Mm-hmm. But they had all the commissioners on. They had Roger Goodell. I liked it. But it just shows that a lot of sports, you're just not sure what's going to happen. Now, MLS is going to be the first sport to come back. Major, right. The major sports, they're going to do a tournament. And if that tournament goes well, then they're going to dive it into starting their season. So they're going to play a tournament just to see how this thing goes down there in Disney before they start their season. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know if you caught any of that at all. Did you?
It just makes – no, I didn't catch that, but it just kind of makes sense to kind of piggyback on what you said. The PGA, and going into the second week, they haven't had anybody test positive that's been on tour. No player, no caddy, no family member who's been with a player has come in contact with the virus. So, again, that's a little bit – you know, so we know golf is a little bit more isolated, and they've gone on to make – they've gone and made – taken strides into making it even further isolated, the PGA has as the players kind of go back into tournament plays, but again the contact sports a little bit different, right? And we're probably talking, you know, they, like I said, they're just a little bit different because they come in contact with their own players, the players on their team, and now they're going to be coming into contact with, you know what I'm saying, with players on an opposing team. So you know. I'm just hoping, man, you know, I'm just hoping like everybody else is hoping that if and not to use any athlete as an experiment, but if they can if you know, saying the you know, we move heaven and earth sometimes for sporting events, right? But so you know, think about the preparations that go into Super Bowls, right? So, you know, hell, you feel like downtown Indianapolis was a whole nother city when we had the Super Bowl here in Indiana. So you know, saying like I said, the thing that the leagues are trying to get to go back for, you know what I'm saying, for everybody, you know what I'm saying. I don't think it's Brandon, like people are kind of muddying the water, saying it's going to be a distraction from any other event that's going on. I don't think it is, quite honestly. And again, that's something we'll probably talk about a little bit on. But you know, yes, there are pockets. Unfortunately, there are pockets. I'm not saying, and this is not going to be a yet but conversation for me. This is a very real conversation for me. So there are pockets of the virus that keep on popping up. But to give us hope to figure out a way to beat it, right? Because that's what the enemy is right now. That's what it really is, man. You know what I'm saying? Enemy of all people. Not to be too high minded, to be honest with you, but the virus is what we got to beat. And so, you know, we put our guys, we put, you know what I'm saying, we can't, this is an unseen thing, man, you know what I mean? And we can't necessarily make, you know what I'm saying, I don't know, man. Is this the best way to bring about hope of any kind? You know what I'm saying? A hope of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
And without being too high-minded, without using too many big words, you know what I'm saying, or trying to figure out another adjective to say, I think it is to bring about hope. Now, you know, and that's just, so, like I said, but here's the thing, though, Brandon. Like you said, Dame Lillard doesn't feel like he wants to play. So, like, if you don't want to play, that's fine. And then go join the movement that you say you also want to tag along. But don't convolute. I don't think they should be mixed, like, while you're not playing. You see what I'm saying? Because Kyrie Irving said, well, we ain't got to play. And we go start our own league. So now you're saying, wait a minute. Now you say you can play, so it's not the virus. Can play because you want to start your own league. But, dude, because I ain't got a problem with that either, Brandon. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there's other minor leagues that are out here that I don't know why. Brandon, it's a whole other conversation. And right now, like, why? You know, like, the most player-friendly league is the NBA. Right? That is the most. They have all the power. The players have all the power in the NBA. They do. I get it. The owners still make the billions of dollars, but damn, man, you know what I'm saying? If you go into an investment for a business for whatever, man, shoot, you know, you want to make some money too, right? You know what I mean? But some of the hangups, here's what I'm saying, trying to say, Brandon, some of the hangups that other leagues have, the NFL, who we talking about, majorly, right? The NBA ain't got. That's why they tried to get. That's why they tried to get the commissioner to come over there, because they wanted him to work. You say, how did you do it? Well, you know, what I'm saying, it don't happen overnight. You know what I'm saying? He couldn't.
Right.
He can't. The NBA commissioner couldn't go over to the NFL because their system is the ugly system, really. You know what I'm saying? When it comes down to contracts, or when it comes down to how you can be cut, you know what I'm saying? How it's kind of built into, well, that's just too bad. You know what I mean? The NFL versus the NBA is like a mess. In that regard. When it comes to, you know what I'm saying, how much players got power when you putting my own body out here on the line. You know what I mean? So, I don't know, man. I think, again, all this is great. All this dialogue is what's needed anyway, though, Brandon, to try to put a ribbon on it. All this dialogue that we're having from millionaire commissioners and billionaire owners, there needs to be more of them. You know what I mean? There needs to be more of them to come out and speak out. And players with power like LeBron James, or players with power like Kyrie Irving. I get Kyrie Irving gets a little cuckoo. You know what I'm saying? The world is flat.
Yeah, he's crazy.
You know what I'm saying? Doesn't want to play for the Boston Celtics. You know what I'm saying? Most of one of the historic teams in the NBA. You can't buy into the team aspect of what Brad Stevens is trying to put together. You know what I'm saying? And you didn't want to play with LeBron, but then you apologize to LeBron because now you know how hard it was. So like. All those things kind of come into question when you think about the reasoning of Kyrie Irving and like, okay, Kyrie, we want to tag along with you too, bro. But like what you said, like, so what are we boycotting for? Are we boycotting the NBA because it's unfair? Because the NBA is fair. Again, different amount of fairness, as I don't want to, you know what I'm saying, tag along with the conversation I had with Craig Hodges, because what happened to Craig Hodges is baloney. And I wouldn't use baloney. I'm just using baloney because we're on a friendly family line. I would say BS if you know what I'm saying. What he went through with the NBA when he tried to stand up for social injustice is BS. You know what I mean? So, but that I'm not saying time heals all wounds, but things have gotten better in that regard for the NBA. You know what I mean? Now guys can use their platform and their player power. Kobe Bryant was I can't breathe T-shirt. When he was shooting in the shoot around, you know what I'm saying? We know LeBron is very outspoken with the community and whatnot. So I just highlight those two because there's others. Derrick Rose is in the community in Chicago as well. Carmelo Anthony. I don't know. There's a list of them. You know what I'm saying? That have Jalen Rose. You know what I'm saying? Former basketball players as well. But like these, more conversation needs to be had. I will say that, and the more conversation needs to be had, the better. You know what I'm saying? And then that's how you. And then after that, you come with resolutions. You come with things that you can that everybody wants to see for going further, going forward. You know?
Yeah. I two things. One, I think the players we need to the NBA. We need to look to. They need to look to move forward, play games, get your money. That way you're taking care of yourself and your family, and get the power from the platform you're using, because everybody's going to be watching basketball, right? So use that platform and help monetize that to change these social injustices. Use that platform that you're going to have every single night on TV, whether it be an interview where you say something at the end of your interview. Use that. It's better to do that than be silent and not in front of the TV, I feel like. And you can be in your communities, but that's not going to be visually appealing to millions of people like it would be if it was during the league.
Right. Like I said,
does that make sense?
It makes total sense to me. I'm for that. The more eyes and ears and listenings, podcasts, whatever. Because people go automatically. As soon as NBA gets turned back on, what do you mean you be going to be talking about? We are. God bless us, you know, America. We try to be sports friendly and you know what I'm saying, with all, you know what I'm saying, university. But like, dude, when I go back and look back to those shows, dude, it's NBA heavy, real very NBA heavy, very NFL heavy. You know what I'm saying? I love the golf now. I love the soccer now. But you know what I'm saying? Those are things that if the NBA was hot and heavy right now with playoffs and potential draft and summer league got right around the corner, I mean, you know, golf would probably be not necessarily in my top 10 right now. because of the circumstances. You know what I'm saying? Because of the circumstances, man. Listen, Brandon. I said this to my sister earlier today. I love the NBA. You know what I'm saying? I also understand that just like a lot of other institutions, it ain't always been perfect or always fair to somebody who looks like me. You know what I'm saying? But of all the institutions that kind of failed us, you name the institution, Brandon. I'm not going to put nobody on blast. I'm just saying. I'm picking on NBA right now, obviously, right? But you name this, they've always tried to rectify a wrong. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying just because you throw money on something that rectifies it. You know what I'm saying? Now, Mr. Craig Hodges would say, Coach Craig Hodges would say a little bit differently, think a little bit differently, and rightfully so. He has proof of that. But from a community-wise, man, the NBA is probably one of the fairest leagues, man. But it needs to be fairer. How about that? You know what I'm saying? Because, again, when me and him chopped it up, and even when me and you talked about it, because we had a difference of opinions with Jay Graves about Michael Jordan, right? And it came up that he was so critical of Michael Jordan, and I was like, dude, you know what I'm saying? Michael Jordan is the NBA. He's a black NBA owner, and he has black people working in his front offices and the offices of the stadium. You know what I'm saying? Now, Now, it looked like, you know, because he was picking on Michael Jordan because, you know what I'm saying, didn't say that was Jay's argument. He wasn't getting back to the community, right? Or wasn't connected. And I was like, man, that's total BS because here's the proof. Again, sometimes you need to start pointing the fingers at the other institutions. If you're into pointing fingers, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of, because like I said, man, again, I would like to see more ownership. There's plans for that. I don't think a lot of people know it. Like Kevin Garnett he wants to open up the Seattle Supersonics. Like he wants to own something. He flirted like four or five years ago with owning the and I think he still does. He owns a piece of MLS team. You know what I'm saying? But he wants to open up the Seattle Supersonics again. And like if the NBA is like, you know, expansive enough, I think they could do it, but you know what I'm saying? There has to be an agreement with ownership and like, can you know what I'm saying? Because they got the people to do it. I was trying to say they got the fandom to do it. They still have I don't want to poo poo it. They still have a women's team there. You know what I'm saying? So I was kind of kooky, man. How can you have a women's team and not a guy's team? Well, here's the thing. The ownership wanted a new stadium and the city didn't want to pay for a new stadium and get into that political red tape of that. But Kevin Garnett wants to be an owner. He wanted to spearhead that, open up the Seattle Supersonics. You know what I'm saying? I know that's just one out of, you know, two out of 32, but you have to, it kind of has to start somewhere. Isaiah Thomas has always held any job Isaiah Thomas held was as a coach or he hasn't been. Yeah, he was general manager of the Knicks. He has the opportunity now. What he's done with the opportunity is kind of, you know, fumbled it or whatever. But it's not. Here's the thing I'm trying to tell you, man. Guys get opportunities to rise up that ladder. And it personally doesn't need to be more, absolutely. You know what I'm saying? But I don't know, man. You know, I just kind of heard a lot of people kind of swaying that saying that, you know, that what, you know, the NBA just needs to go away because now we need to start our own. And I'm like, wait a minute. So, no. Is it my personal opinion? If you're sick, if you worry about the health crisis, I can totally understand that. I do. I even understand the movement, too. If you want to go join, if you want to go support the movement, go support the NBA. Told you they ain't not gonna take your cash, not all of it. They told you they're gonna take percentage of your cash because you ain't playing. Like, you know, they still give me. That's how fair they are. They say, all right, man, go support your people, and we're still gonna pay you. That's the truth, right? So, I don't know, man. I think people. I'm not gonna knock anybody. Anybody who's trying to move for change. Whether they on whatever side of that particular argument, debate, restart the NBA, or go support the movement, I'm gonna agree with Brandon because we can do, actually, man, crazy it is, man, we can have more than the one way to skin a cat. You know what I'm saying? There's two ways to
I don't like it.
To bring about
I don't like it. I don't like it. I think you got enough with the G League. You've got enough with the Big Three. You don't need to bring in some other half-ass league that's not going to make it.
No.
How the NFL's done it.
I'm not talking about that part. I'm not talking about that change. I'm just talking about the support. I'm not talking about that. I don't think.
I thought you were talking about Kyrie.
Brandon, No. Well, no. So when you break down, so okay, let's talk about it. When you break down the economics of somebody trying to start a league, it would be it would pale in. Like I'm not saying it would be a lesser league because if LeBron James stepped over to a new league and a whole lot of other players were following, but where's the other economics going to come from? Yes, the endorsements are going to follow. Yes, Sprite. Yes, you know what I'm saying. But
I don't know, John. I don't think it would. I don't think a lot of people would go.
I'm getting to the point. I'm saying it would. It would be very hard because you got it's a lot of red tape. Finding facilities for everybody to play. There's a lot of red tape, and then you know, say how you first teams, how you put together a team. All those things would have to be answered. And somebody got to be willing to take a loss, take a risk. Because
if LeBron James went, I don't think others would. If they can get LeBron James out of the league, guess what that means, John? You know what that means? They got a better chance to win a title. Plain and simple, ask the Eastern Conference for the last how many years. If LeBron James is in the East and he's not playing, hey, just because this star player goes there, I still think the revenue, I still think the viewership – I think that would still hone in so much on the NBA because there's so much rich history and tradition and guaranteed money that you're going to get from there that you're not going to get from
another league, right?
From a new league,
then,
yes,
right. And then we'd also not necessarily bring into account what like this. I don't know, man. Okay.
No.
Again, you're talking about a league where. Well, the guy's got a lot of power. John Wall ain't played 9 basketball games in 2 years, and he makes $41 million. He makes $42 million next year. $45 million next year, and another 42. I don't know if that's why it makes him darn near untradeable. You know what I'm saying? So, but again, I'm not saying when I throw out those numbers, Brandon, you'd be like, "So, dude, why ain't he doing more with his?" If we're, I mean, and not saying he's one of the ones that's complaining, or no, he's not the one. You know what I'm saying? Everybody, you know what I mean? But why aren't guys doing more now with what they have? Assets and an ability, you know what I'm saying, to bring about change. Don't necessarily just say quit. You just saying that's my stance. Don't say quit. Keep on using, like you said, Brandon, keep on using the assets that are funneled through us. Keep on using our podium. Keep on using our stage. There's a million cameras, you know what I'm saying, that we're going to have on us. There's a million microphones they're going to have on us. You know what I'm saying? That's how you bring about. You got to get more voices out there. Because like I just said at the start of this rant, right? The more discussion we have, the better.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I totally agree. You know, there's growing concern for this bubble where players talk about they don't want to play. Some of them want to. There's people that are nervous about it. I understand all that. Western Conference mm-hmm. coach believe that there's one or two, and it's anonymous, but – apparently, there's one or two Western Conference coaches that believe a lockout for the 2020-21 season is possible for a lockout, depending on what goes on with this event here. Also, the players have until June 24th to let their teams know if they're going to be playing or not, so that way they can make way to build up their rosters with some other players. I think you may – here's my thought, John. I think you may get one or two – players that are a big name that don't play and they're going to sit out for the social injustices and stuff. That'll be their thing. But mm-hmm. looking at it, if they can get to play basketball and try to win a title, some of these teams and try to, cause you've been sitting at home since March, you know? So I think you maybe get one or two players that won't play, but big name wise, but I think that'll be it. The NBA also just came out today with 113 page Disney rule book for the players as to what they can, what they can't do, where they can go. If they go off property for more than, if it's more than 30 minutes to an hour, then they have to self-isolate for 8 to 10 days. If they go off the premises, they can go off if they want, but if they're gone for over a certain amount of time, they have to self-isolate. There's also, and this is crazy, there's an anonymous tip line that you can report somebody or some, whether it be a player, a coach, a staff member or so that's not following these guidelines. There's an anonymous tip line. So narking is now also big in the NBA going to be for that. 113 pages, John. I read some of these rules. It's crazy. some of these rules I read probably – I skimmed through the whole 113 pages. Some of this stuff is nuts. But if that's what it takes to get these players in the league, then so be it to me.
Well, I go back to what all guys like to tell me, man. You know what I'm saying? If not scared about the COVID-19, ball is life. Take that term. I remember a lot of guys got it tattooed on their arm. Ball is life, man. And you know what I'm saying? Take the message to the masses. You know what I'm saying? Take the message out to the masses. Play your game, man. And whether you win or lose, man, go out there and represent for what you want to represent for. You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to be a jerk like Greg Popovich is a jerk after press conferences. You know what I mean? I can't think of somebody else who's a terrible after press conference interview. Rasheed Wallace. You don't have to be, distasteful for the media like that, man. But people are going to be wanting to be known and go up there and say something smart. Go up there and say something intelligent. Hopefully, you know what I'm saying, go up there and represent your community that you impassed for. Brandon, don't let me get a chance. You know what I'm saying? That's why. Don't let me get a chance. That's what I'm saying, man. Don't let me get a chance to say something, if you know what I'm saying, somebody stick a microphone in my face and there's a camera attached to it and there's, you know, Channel 13 or 8 or NBC or whatever, CBS or whatever, I'm going to tell you, you know, something positive and, like, what the community is kind of looking for, at least from my lens, you know. So, you know, I don't know, man. I wouldn't boycott, you know what I mean? I wouldn't.
Okay. Yep, I agree. John, we've got our guest here shortly in about 5 minutes or so, but real quick,
yep.
I don't want to get into the baseball stuff.
Okay.
Real quick,
man.
I want to talk real quick about PGA Tour. Let's talk about the golf.
Okay.
So golf was back this past weekend. First big tournament, Charles Schwab, Daniel Berger gets the win, which is crazy because his last two wins were in the St. Jude's event that has been played the third weekend of June or second weekend of June
right.
Every year. Obviously they move the schedule around. So he seems to turn it on in June, but that's
right.
Not the story. The story was, there was some missed putts towards the end of that round that made me feel a little better about the way I putt.
So Brandon, why is it, so the after reporter was like saying this tournament was a game of nobodies, but it came down to him and I don't want to butcher the guy's last name, Marakawa.
Yeah.
It came down to
Marakawa.
They came down to the last two putts. So it would have been better for if he had won because he's the budding superstar than Berger who actually, you know what I'm saying, he should have won by a half
well,
stroke. Double-digit stroke.
Berger's won before. Berger's won before. Marakawa, he is up and coming as a great golfer. I mean, the roster for this tournament, it was stacked. I mean, you had, like I said, you had, what, 8 of the top 12 golfers in the world? I think you had 12 of the top 20 golfers in the world playing in this tournament. And normally this tournament doesn't have big names. It maybe have one or two. But, I mean, you had your Rory, who played well the first three rounds of this golf tournament, and then he fell apart. You had Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth, I put on our Facebook page a while back. I don't know what happened to Jordan Spieth. He won so many times in 2015, and then he fell off the face of the earth for the last 3 years. He even placed in the top 10 or top 5. So he played well. So I was like, all right, Jordan Spieth, he's back. Ricky Fowler, he played decent. He played all right. He struggled kind of early. Kevin Kisner, another golfer that played really well in this. So they have a lot of talent in here. The guys played well.
Uh-huh.
Dustin Johnson didn't play well. Brooks Koepka played okay. But, yeah, it was – and I think it's the fact of you kind of see who's worked on their game, who hasn't. And I think it just showed that some golfers were rusty. The fact there's no fans there, some of them said that it felt weird. Because it didn't feel like a PGA Tour event. It felt like they were just out at their local country club playing 18 holes of golf. And
viewership is up year over year, so they pulled in three million viewers, which especially is a 50% growth, 50% jump up from last year. So they're taking advantage of their time.
Absolutely, they have stepped up and they have hit it nail right on the head when they need to. And I'm going to ask Coach Fleck this when we get on. How important is it right now that PGA sits on top of the sports world? With all the eyes, whether it be the old golfers, the middle-aged golfers, or even the youngsters watching golf now that they may not, they may not even looked at it a while back as a sport that they wanted to compete. But with the PGA Tour now center spotlight, I think it's going to get a lot more people in the game of golf. I think it's great that they're stepping up doing this. And, yeah, I thought it was a great tournament overall, John. Yeah, Daniel Berger won. It was a crazy ending. I mean, there was three lip outs. Xander Schauffele, he missed a couple putts that were close-up ones. It made me feel better about my putting a couple times when I miss close putts like that. I can say, hey, you know what? I've seen it. I've been there, whatnot. But, yeah, it was good for the PGA. And now they're back this weekend in South Carolina, so I'm looking forward to it starting tomorrow.
Super.
So, absolutely. All right, John, looks like we have our guest. Let me bring him on here. All right, folks, it's my pleasure as a Ball State alum, John, you and me both Ball State alums, that we welcome our guest. I'm going to call him the OG of Ball State because he's been there forever. The Ball State head golf coach, Mike Fleck. Coach, how are you?
Hey, Brandon, Jonathan, how are you guys? Glad to be joining you. Hey, Bill Richards is the OG of Ball State, the tennis coach. He's pushing 50 years. I'm not close, but man, it's going to take me a while to close in on 50.
All right. Well, it's great to have you, Coach, and it's beautiful weather right now for golf. Beautiful.
Yeah,
weather.
No, it's been great. I've been listening to what you guys have been talking about, and the content's awesome. And talking about that PGA Tour event, you know, the old saying. Drive for show, putt for dough kind of came into play at the end of that event, you know, when you guys were referencing those short putts and, you know, you can drive the ball out there a mile, but man, you gotta convert those 3 to 5 footers too. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So coach, my first question for you is, with the sports world now starting to bring back sports and PGA right now, golf is up top. NASCAR has been there a little bit, but with golf now the center of attention, everybody's watching it. Viewership had 3 million viewers this past weekend on the final round. How important is it for the game of golf right now to be the focal point of everybody's sports world eyes?
I don't know if it's necessarily important for it to be the focal point. It's just important to get live sports going again. And, you know, we're just a beneficiary right now because – you know, golf is active, you know, hopefully, you know, we get the NBA rolling, you know, I'd love to see Major League Baseball, you know, connect the two groups and get going, obviously NASCAR, but it does help our sport. It provides a little bit of a platform, you know, for people that, you know, are starving to see some live sports. And, you know, we've got some great ambassadors in the game of golf. And you guys talked about you know, the quality of the field and the players that were all in contention. And that's just a bonus for us right now to have those guys, you know, in the mix and competing live and being able to watch it and follow it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Another thing, coach, with this pandemic, obviously you guys had your fall season. And then the spring season was just getting ramped up. How big of a change was that when you have all these plans set and what you guys want to do? I mean, you guys started off great winning your first tournament. And then all of a sudden it just kind of boom, we're done. I mean, that had to be a huge deflate.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, you know, we all have our stories and, you know, kind of remember those moments of where we were and what was happening, you know, those early days of March. And, you know, I remember we just got back from a spring break trip and we were out in Arizona for a week and, you know, we had, our next tournament was a couple weeks away, so we kind of had some time to, you know, hopefully have the weather kind of change, get out, start qualifying, playing, get ready for Vanderbilt. And I remember sitting in my office watching some of these basketball tournaments and you know, my phone, the ESPN app, just blowing up, you know, the Big East. You know, kids aren't going on the floor, you know, they're not starting the games in the Big Ten and, you know, following the MAC tournament because our team was, I believe, in the quarterfinals at that time. You know, watching that the MAC games weren't going to happen, and you just kind of had that feeling, you know, when it happened the night before and with the NBA, you just kind of knew it was maybe a matter of time that, you know, they were going to slowly start to shut everything down. And, you know, unfortunately it happened with us, and too bad. I felt bad for the guys. You know, it was one of the toughest team meetings that I had, in my 20 some years, you know, going in and telling these guys that, you know, we're not going to be able to continue, but, you know, God has a plan and, you know, it wasn't meant to be. And, you know, there'll be benefits from this down the road. You know, just maybe can't see them right now, but, we will eventually.
Mm-hmm. Coach, I got John Bertone. Coach, I got a question.
Yeah,
I like to start at the beginning. So, because you've been both a student athlete at Ball State and now a coach, man. So, how did your relationship? How did you choose? I want to know how that works. Anyway, how does recruiting work from a coach's aspect, and how did you end up at Ball State?
Yeah. So you and I weren't too far apart. You graduated, I think, in '97,
sure, right.
And I graduated in '93. So I came back and started coaching in '98. But yeah, I played at Ball State. Played for a legendary coach, Earl Yestingsmeyer, and we've got a golf building named after him. He's in every, you know, golf hall of fame that you can imagine. He was the coach for 36 years. And honestly, John, when I graduated, I was much like every other kid that played for him, thinking, you know what, this guy's going to coach this program for the next 100 years because he's an institution. You know, it's his golf program, and unfortunately, he kind of came on some health related issues and could no longer kind of do the job at the capacity that the university was wanting him to do it. I just got dumb lucky. I had zero coaching experience. I didn't, you know, had no interest in coaching. I was a golf pro at a local golf course outside of Muncie, Hickory Hills, mm-hmm. over farmland, and just knew enough people to throw my hat in the ring. And lo and behold, I ended up getting a job. And now, honestly, I don't know what the heck I'd be doing if I wasn't coaching the golf program at Ball State. So that was kind of my
okay.
journey through it all. So and now, you
okay.
know, it's just a passion. It's, you know, it is such a strong desire of mine to help young men make progress and get them ready for life. And as you guys know, and a lot of, I mean, you know, who knows what life's going to throw at you these days, you know, all kind of
right.
stuff.
Right.
You know, right. our guys are you know, this collegiate process is a small framework of time in their lifetime, but it's definitely an impressionable period of time where you can, you know, help them better understand, you know, their value system. And like I said, you know, you get them ready for life. And, you know, oh, by the way, we're competing, which is another burning desire of mine to, you know, to go have success and be competitive and do the best that you can. So yeah, that's kind of how it all came to be for me.
Okay. What kind of promises, if any, or, you know what I'm saying, did you make to yourself when you got the job, when you first got the job?
You know what? It's interesting, and I don't want to get – I certainly don't want to go too deep on you guys, but I lost my
okay.
dad in 97. My dad passed away in 97, and he was the one that introduced me to the game of golf, and I remember that connection, us driving all around the state, him taking me to junior golf tournaments and, you know, joining him out at the golf course on the weekend. So when I got the job, John, I made two promises. I made a promise to myself that I was going to make my dad proud, and I made a promise mm-hmm. to myself that I was going to make Coach proud, the coach that I played for and
mm-hmm.
you know, that was basically the father of Ball State golf. So when I took that position, you know, I made those two oaths to, you know, make my dad proud and make Coach proud and do it the right way. And,
okay.
you know, I feel like, and I hope that, you know, we've been able to do that for 20 some years and hopefully continue it a little bit longer.
Okay. Brent.
Yeah, absolutely. Coach, what, over your years, like you said, you've been there 22 years now. Talk about the improvement of the game and the technology that the game of golf has went. Like, I mean, I just watched a tournament the other day that was back in, Arnold Palmer's last U.S. Open. And obviously today was the
mm-hmm.
date of his last one and as well 94. But talk about just the technology, how much it's improved, because I went and hit some new clubs the other day because I was looking to get some new ones. And I hit the same distance. I even got a little bit further with these new clubs. And I'm just like, the technology is just crazy from where it was at to where it's at now. And
I think it's much like everything else. I mean, you know, obviously the technology has a first-hand impact on golf, but, you know, it's like the video technology with the replays, and, you know, every sport is coming along. I think the thing that you're seeing with golf, and it's definitely different from when I was growing up and you know, maybe in the younger days when John was growing up, but athletes didn't play golf. You know, I ended up playing on the golf team because I was too small to play football and I was going to get my brains beat out. You know, I was too small, you know, to play basketball. Baseball was a passion of mine, but, you know, that didn't seem to be the right fit. So I gravitated to golf. And now I just think, you know, between more athletic guys playing the sport, and the combination of the golf ball and the technology, it's allowing guys to just, you know, move the golf ball out there in a distance, you know, and so far that it's hard to comprehend. I mean, you know, you look at this week's event. Gary Woodland, who was in contention, spent COVID losing 25 pounds to get in shape, because he felt like that's what he needed to do to be able to finish golf tournaments, both mentally and physically. And then you've got Bryson DeChambeau, who's drinking 5 protein shakes a day, gaining 25 pounds because he thinks that's what he needs to do to finish golf tournaments and get more club head speed and hit the ball farther. So, you know, you're talking about so many different ways to, you know, I think John said it earlier, there's so many ways to skin a cat. You know, golf is kind of in that mode right now where, you know, what's best? Nobody knows. But, you know, I do know that speed and power is overtaking the sport. And you know, your 300-yard drive that you referenced, that you hit, you know, that's where our sport's going. You know, if you can't move it out there, you're not going to compete at a very high level nowadays. Plain and simple.
Oh, yeah. So, hey, I'm pumped. So, yeah. I had that drive today, and I looked at my group of guys. I said, we're going to track this one because that felt like it went pretty far. And
I'm not playing the devil's advocate here, but John, how many days has it been since we haven't had rain? You know how firm that ground is out there right now?
Oh, wow.
Huh?
Hey,
oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I'll tell you this. The course was in immaculate condition. I was surprised. I play a shout out Pebble Brook North, right up here, up off the State Road 32 in Westfield.
Yeah.
I was surprised how it was, but I played the other way. Where I hit the green and it bounced up about 6 feet in the air. So, rolled completely off.
And
you, so it's.
And you guys know I'm just kidding. It's that Ball State connection, or I wouldn't be. I'd be
Absolutely. So, two things. One, recently, obviously, with the COVID-19, some colleges are starting to cut certain programs. I see an article where Akron was cutting their men's golf program. What's your thoughts on some of these campuses going through and deciding to cut the sports program, the golf programs?
You know, it's such a unique time frame. You know, I'm not sure what to think about it. You know, I certainly maybe have some opinions, you know, trying to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak, and some of these, you know, group of five conferences and it's really hard to do, you know, relative to the Power Fives. But, you know, I know the state of Ohio was struggling even before COVID, you know, financially. And you know, Illinois was in the same boat. And I think Michigan had some issues. But, you know, we were fortunate here in Indiana. I think we were we were in a pretty decent financial position. And I think I even saw today that there are going to be no cuts in the funding K-12 in the state of Indiana, which is unbelievable. You know, given the time and seeing, you know, what's been happening with the economy and cuts and all that. So, yeah, it was tough. You know, a good friend of mine, David Trainer, coaches that golf team over at Akron, and, you know, they've got Firestone, which is iconic facility, you know, in the world of golf. And, you know, to see that happen, and then, you know, obviously Bowling Green with baseball, and then they reinstated it. But, you know, there was a 3-day stretch there, I think, where the MAC was taking some pretty decent hits, you know, relative to sport attrition. You know, we're just fortunate here at Ball State that, you know, Beth Getz, our AD, had reminded us in some of the coaches' meetings, you know, there's been zero talk of dropping sports here at Ball State. And I think it's just a testament to, you know, maybe our university's vision and financial, you know, how well they've done fiscally, and then obviously the state of Indiana. So, you know, we're lucky that it didn't hit us like it did some of our peers in other states.
How important, coach, is it to you mentioned earlier your new golf center? How important is that in recruiting to be able to showcase that state of the art golf center there? Hey, come here, middle of dead winter, 10 degrees outside, snowing, but you can get your work on your game here. How important is that to recruiting?
It's huge. It gives us a component that we've never had. I mean, we've got two great golf courses here in Muncie, you know, Delaware Country Club and the Players Club. But, you know, like you mentioned, if you're a young man in the Midwest or in the northern part of the country, you know, and realistically, you're not going to go south to play golf. You know, you're going to go to a place where you have, you know, 2-3 months of really not a lot of anything. And the facility just gives our guys that opportunity to get in there, to stay sharp. You know, it's a home. We've got the locker rooms in there, player lounge. We've got all the golf technology you can imagine. But you know, they have fellowship in there. They hang out in there. They obviously do schoolwork, you know, on top of practicing. And those are the things that, you know, as a coach, I can't coach and teach chemistry. You know, and I can't teach that connectedness. And for these guys to be able to have a place like that to go in during the winter, not only to train, but to spend time and continue to build those relationships is huge for us.
Okay. I got some fun questions for you, Coach. What's your personal favorite courses? What's your favorite personal courses to play?
Oh, man. I mean, if you're talking about the state of Indiana, I love Sycamore Hills up in Fort Wayne. It's a Jack Nicklaus design. Actually, a former teammate of mine is the golf professional up there, Tim Frazier. We had a MAC championship there a couple years ago. We were scheduled to go back up there this spring, and now we'll do it in the spring of 21. You know, Crooked Stick is obviously phenomenal. Pete Dye designed there in Carmel. And Victoria National, which is probably one of the hardest golf courses in the state now that Wolf Run is no longer around in Zionsville. Those are three of my favorites. I'd say globally, though, you know, I had a chance to play Pebble Beach, and I think I've had three of those moments during my career where I've stepped onto a golf facility and just been blown away by just, you know, the history, seeing it, matching it up with what I thought, you know, I was expecting, and it's Pebble Beach. You know, when you walk out there on 18 and you see that coastline, it's Pinehurst. When you walk around the back of the building and you see 18 green and you've got that statue of Payne Stewart there, you know, and just thinking about everything that happened when he made that putt. And then, you know, a few years later, he died in that plane crash. And then St. Andrews over in Scotland, you know, just walking through the town of St. Andrews and coming up on the golf course that kind of just looks like one and 18 are just kind of wedged into the framework of the city. And then, you know, it's just a links course with nine of them going out and nine of them coming back. But those three courses, when I stepped foot on the property, kind of, you know, took my breath away and just made me kind of take a step back and really, really appreciate, you know, the path that I've been able to go down and the places that I've been able to go.
Okay. Okay. John, we got one?
Coach, I do a lot of research whenever we bring somebody on the show, and I want to know if it's true or not. Are you a Reds fan?
Oh, huge.
That's what I like to hear.
Reds,
okay.
Reds and Bengals. I
don't know about that second one.
Well, hey, here's the deal. I was born in Cincinnati. You know, I grew up. My dad had season tickets to Reds games, and I went to my fair share of Bengals games. Grew up in a small town called Batesville down in the southeastern part of the state. And even when I was growing up, all of our news coverage came from Cincinnati. So it's, you know, John, I'm a huge
that part of Ohio,
I'm a big
right.
Reds fan. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So go ahead.
No, well, I just want to know, what's your favorite era of Reds baseball?
Oh, my God, big Red Machine, no doubt about it. I was 5-6 years old in 75, 76. You know, I think I could probably still name the starting lineup with Rose and Perez and Morgan and Bench and Griffey and Foster and Cesar Geronimo. And,
oh, wow.
You know, I just loved watching that group. And then, you know, the futility between the Reds and the Bengals, we don't win a lot. So that year in 90 when we went wire to wire, I'm still basking in that sunlight, you know, because nobody's done it since. But, man, it seems like it wasn't that long ago, but what is that now, 30 years?
Right.
You know, so yeah, I would say the Big Red Machine, you know, Pete Rose is my all-time favorite. And then obviously that wire-to-wire team. And I was so excited this year because I thought we had a chance, and we have a have a good team. I had tickets. My brother lives in Denver, and I was gonna fly him in. His birthday was March 26th. That was Reds opening day. We were gonna go down, do the Finley Day parade, go to the game, spend the night, you know, hopefully celebrate a victory. And you know, again, all that was kind of messed up with COVID. But big Reds fan.
Well, outside of Castillo, you still trust that the bullpen? I'm just asking. I know you. Hey, Coach, you listen to. I'm teasing with you, but I'm also teasing with Brandon because Brandon also is a big time Cincinnati Reds fan as well. At the same time, Brandon is also the biggest Pittsburgh Steelers fan as well. So you
hey, come on. Now I was trying not to let Coach know that.
We wouldn't get along in that department. But John, I'll tell you this. So it's interesting. Like I was stoked about our starting lineup, and on opening day this year, I sat in my house and I watched opening day last year, which we played Pittsburgh, and you know it's 3-2. We've got a 1-run lead going into the ninth. Our bullpen is trash. We load the bases, two out. I'm a nervous wreck. I'm sitting on the edge of the couch thinking, can we really blow this? And then I have to sit there and stop myself and say, we played this game last year. We won opening day. You know what happens, but, you know, that bullpen puts me on edge every time I watch him. I like the starters.
I do, too. Okay. I'm looking forward to it. They broke my heart in 2013. We had a 2-0 series lead against the Giants. And then
I know.
It all unraveled from there. But
I know. And correct me if I'm wrong, but we won those two games in San Fran, right?
Yes, we did. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And came back here and
it was bad.
Now I'm putting all my stock in Joe Burrow.
Yeah. Oh boy. He'll be all right. Me and Jonathan talked. I think he'll be all right.
Yeah, we'll see. We haven't had a very good history of number one picks, so I'm hoping this one pans out.
Yeah. On the John Ross. Coach, what have you yourself had a hole in one, or somebody in one of your groups when you're playing, or what's the? And if not, what? I mean, everybody's got their story of their closest one. What's your closest story?
Yeah, no, I had one. I had one in college, down at Fripp Island. It was our spring break trip, and unfortunately, it was in a practice round. I was playing with a teammate of mine, Kyle Marsh, and a guy by the name of Arno Wittig, who was the dean of the Honors College. That went on the trip with us, and I knocked it in on the 11th hole during a practice round, so it basically was kind of meaningless. And it was late in the evening; we were only playing 9 holes, so I didn't even post an official score. But I have seen several, you know, being a coach and being around it all the time. You know, I've seen several players make some ones. I think maybe one of my more memorable ones from a college player would be a young man named C.D. Hockersmith who played for me out of Richmond. He had an ace over at Firestone in that tournament on the 11th hole there as well. So I've seen a lot. I've had a lot of really close calls, but I can say that I'm a member of the Hole in One Club. So that's nice.
Awesome. Okay. Very awesome. Last two I got for you, Coach. Number one, once we get college, the kids back in schools and we start ramping up, what's the outlook, and when you guys this fall season tentatively looking to start this fall?
Yeah, so we're on track. We don't have any NCAA legislative stipulations during the summer, so our guys are totally on their own during the summer. But they're playing in tournaments all over the place, and as you guys know, you know, golf was kind of that one sport that really, you know, unless you were in Marion County, kind of continued all throughout. So our guys were playing, but we'll start out. The third week of August when school starts, our first competition is our home invitational over at Delaware Country Club on September 4th and 5th. I think we open up in football on the 3rd that night against Maine on that Thursday night. So, you know, I am fully anticipating all systems go. You know, we've got a five tournament schedule that runs into the middle part of October, and, you know, we'll continue to prepare and be ready for it. And, you know, if it happens, it's go time, and if it doesn't, then, you know, we'll come up with a plan B.
Okay. Perfect. Well, Coach, I want to thank you, man. I love when we're talking golf. I had to get Jonathan I said, hey, start prepping up your golf, because that's what we've got, and I talk about it all the time. I'm the only one talking about it on our show quite a bit. So I do want to thank you for coming on, and hey, we want to get up there. Me and Jonathan talked about getting up there soon to Muncie, just to go back through campus again. I want to check out that new facility. It looks amazing with the pictures.
You guys have an open invite. It's my goal to get you to change your background picture from that Ball State game down at Lucas to a shot of the three of us in the Earl Yesingsmeyer Golf Center, and that way you guys can put that up on your page. But it's been a blast being with you, Brandon and John, and appreciate all that you guys are doing, and chirp, chirp.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Thanks, Coach. Have a good one.
All right. See you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Coach.
Absolutely. All right, Jonathan. That was Coach Fleck. What a great interview. Another fantastic interview.
Dude, you're right. Awesome.
And hey,
I gotta get there.
I didn't ask for my tips. It's okay. I think I'll ask him when we're there.
I think you got a lot of.
It's
there. You get them.
Oh yeah, it's easier to get your tips when you're there. But hey, the fact that he heard me talk about that drive, I'm ecstatic. Yes, the ground was hard. No, there was no cart path nearby that it bounced off of. That was what my dad. That was the first thing my dad asked. Did it hit off a cart path? No, it didn't hit a cart path, and it wasn't even windy. So I just hit the damn golf ball finally straight down the middle, and it felt good. Which means, and I have to throw it out here again, Reggie Sykes, man, you better be ready, my man. Reggie Sykes, next week.
What time y'all want to play?
Next week or the week?
What time y'all want to play? What day?
I don't care when we play. I know he works overnight. You let me know when you can get off, Jonathan.
Oh, do
that
I
way,
get there early?
Then we can.
Like we got to get there like 8, 9 o'clock?
No. We can do midday. He's got to get his beauty sleep.
Yeah, he's got to get his beauty sleep. But, yeah, we'll get that worked out, because that needs to get worked out.
It needs to be next week or the week after. Okay? That's what's got to be worked out. Because I don't know if I'll be this hot by that time.
Wow.
I might not be this hot.
Now you calling your shot?
So.
Now you calling your shot.
Absolutely. All right, John. We talked a little bit. We're getting ready to hot talk into baseball. Long gone summer. The 30 for 30 with Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire. It was more or less a Mark McGwire documentary. Talking about the – and to me, John, everybody was talking about how it didn't live up to the hype. I thought it was okay. Yeah, it's not going to live up to The Last Dance. Nothing ever will, the way the production level of that was. But it was more – to me, it was more of a, hey, let's relive 1998 of the summer again because it was fun. Yeah, it was awesome to relive that summer. I didn't get any new information from that 30 for 30 that I was waiting for. Give me more of the congressional hearings with them talking about baseball and steroids. Hit them harder with the questions. Admit to it there, Sammy Sosa, still not admitting that he took steroids. That's a whole other thing. But I thought it was an okay episode. It was interesting to watch. I totally forgot Sammy Sosa had 20 homers in the month of June. Totally forgot that. I totally forgot that he at one point was the leader of 66 home runs. He was beat McGwire with 66 at a point.
Right, he was up.
Yeah, so I don't know if you got to catch any of it. Or if you remember it back in 1998, a little bit going on.
Little bit of both, bits and pieces of it. I remember it feeling like it was genuine. I really didn't think during that time back in 97 that steroids or performance enhancer was that big of a deal. You know what I'm saying? I felt like they had kind of went through a scandal. A couple years prior too, but obviously that's not the case, and we are smarter now. The science of baseball, Brandon. Yes, I totally agree with it, man. Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire and even Barry Bonds, who wasn't including this, you know what I'm saying? But you know what I'm saying? It's considered a great hitter. They have great hitting ability. Alex Rodriguez, they have great hand eye to bat to ball, you know what I'm saying? Ability, and they are strong people, but. You know what I'm saying? The whole farce of it all is that you put something to make you go a little bit better, right? So was it real? And then the argument back is, well, the pitcher's out there doing it too. Well, you know.
Absolutely.
if a handful, but like if a handful, if a bad, if one bad apple spoils a bunch, man, then a handful of bad apples on either side of the ball, offense or defense, if we break it down like that, spoils that whole bunch, man. So these guys, Mark McGwire still works. He's been allowed to come back into the Major League Baseball to work or whatever. Sammy Sosa wants to desperately come back, and he thinks he can become a media darling again in some form or fashion. Either he's still alienated, you know what I'm saying, with the Cubs. He's still, you know what I'm saying, they still ain't on the same page. You know, so what you going to go? He's going to go in as a – if the Major League Baseball does allow him to come in, he's going to go in as a White Sox? You know what I mean? I don't know, man. So again, man, to watch some of those highlights, though, go back and relive them, man. Because, like, man, they, you know, again, man, I appreciate their great hand-eye coordination. But, damn, man, maybe some of those should have been a triple or a double instead of a home run. You know what I'm saying? So those some of the ones that they both hit, or they could have been pop-outs. You never know. You know what I'm saying? And we'll never know because they had the specter of cheat on them.
So Mark McGwire was allowed back in baseball. Sammy Sosa, still blackballed right now, not allowed back. But also another one that it's kind of fallen off the face of earth with everything with him, and he's not even allowed back to work with players or work with teams, Barry Bonds.
Right. Well,
he's a Hall of Famer. He's a Hall of Famer just for what he did in Pittsburgh, let alone San Francisco.
That's what I said. When you posted a picture on the Crossroads page, the accident is Barry Bonds. That's wacky. I just gave you the science of baseball. So at the point of when he played for San Francisco, they batted around him. They actually threw away because they were scared of what he's going to do. They were scared he was going to hit a double. They were scared he was going to hit a single. They were scared he was going to advance a runner. They were scared he was going to hit a home run. So he leave the league in like walks as well.
Yeah,
that year or something like that. A player's walk, man, it's crazy, man. So even with the specter of steroids or whatever, because like he's still kind of going, you know, people kind of going through it. The specter of it was out by then. That they kind of thought that he did, but they still walked him, you know. Barry is out of Major League Baseball because he's not media friendly. And if you're gonna work for a program, whether it's the Oakland A's, the San Francisco Giants, or the Dodgers, or whoever he would get a job with, you got to learn how to be media friendly. You can't be, because he hasn't been, you know what I'm saying, open about whatever he put in his body to make him better, or you know what I'm saying, to make him more whatever he thought was gonna be better. He hasn't been necessarily honest about it. So until those things happen, he's on the outside looking in.
The biggest case of steroids usage that is the most obvious, and the guy has not admitted to it. I posted it on the Facebook page and on my own personal page earlier this week. If you're listening, go to Google and type in Brady Anderson. He played for the Orioles, outfielder. You might remember him from the 90s. Played for the Orioles, okay? Look at his stat line for his best season and compare it to the rest, and you're going to see something that sticks out. There, I think it was 96 or 97, he had 50 home runs, okay? 50 home runs, 120-some or 130-some RBIs. Best season he had, MVP, AL MVP candidate, everything like that. Years before that, 20-some home runs, 22 home runs. Years after that year, 20-some home runs, 18 home runs.
Right.
Like, boy, what did he do that one year, and he still won't admit that he took steroids for that. I mean, if that ain't the most blatant stat line of performance enhancers, I don't know what is. And, John, I've always been that person that said, hey, you know what? Hey, yeah, the batters might have been juiced, but you know what? Some of the pitchers were juiced too. And I understand, I see both sides of the complaint with it. But
what leg did Sammy
Sosa
have to stand on? He had the cork bat too, man. He's out there purposely.
He did.
Cheating.
Yeah, he was. Absolutely. He was out there. Absolutely. But I think Barry Bonds deserves to be in the Hall of Fame 1,000%. I hate that he's blackballed from the league. I think Mark McGwire should be in the Hall of Fame. Sosa, I don't know. Like you said, he had the cork bat incident, so he.
Sammy Sosa.
Yeah,
terrible.
It was terrible. Pete Rose definitely should be in the Hall of Fame. So
we already know.
There's
banging that drum. Pete Rose, yeah.
I know. Also today, it was reported with Major League Baseball, one of the reporters for that's a good source said that there's an agreement that Major League Baseball is agreeing to return. It's going to be about a 60-game season, prorated pay, including expanding the playoffs. It's interesting because then the MLPA put out a statement maybe 20 minutes after let me see if I have that, where it went to. Put out a statement 20 minutes after that saying, we have not agreed to anything. Anything you're hearing is all false. So baseball may be back. And then the commissioner of baseball spoke out and said, hey, we had a great discussion today, which is crazy. They did not talk for a week. That's crazy enough that they just finally talked today after
right.
a week. It's nasty it got out into the media with all the numbers. The players are like, hey, you tell us when and where, we'll play. And then the owners are like, well, we want to do this at a prorated amount. And I listened to Tucker Barnhart interview today on this morning on my way to golf. And, you know, he's right. Players just want to be paid for what they're going to be playing. And the fact that the commissioner heard tell us when and where, that threw up a red flag for them to think, okay, well, they're going to throw a grievance up. What does a grievance do? Well, a grievance opens up just how much money Major League Baseball is making off of TV deals, off of all that. So
right.
that's more of a negotiation tactic, which I do think we will go on strike again. I really do. If it's not, it won't be this year. But obviously, I think after next year's collective bargaining, I think there's a good chance they could. But I also want people, real quick, before you talk on it, I want to remind people, and they need to remember, Commissioner Manfred is not like other commissioners, okay? He doesn't have the power that the other commissioners have in sports. He is an employee of the 30 owners in baseball, and he's basically just carrying
right.
out their wishes, demands, strategy, and whatever direction. He represents their position only. If they change direction, he carries it out. So the people that are bitching and complaining at him, don't complain to him. He works for the owners. He's just carrying out whatever they want as in this, unlike Adam Silver, unlike Roger Goodell. And Roger Goodell is more of a mediator and such for the
right.
owners and the players. But, yeah, Commissioner Manfred, he's pretty much – he doesn't have the power that these other guys have. So I know he's the front and center, but people are dragging him under the bus. It's not all Manfred's fault, people.
Yeah, I would imagine that they do strike next year. Because I think, Brandon, some of these owners are going to put it on the players, but some of these owners kind of want more revenue share. So, you know, saying the bottom feeding teams probably want more revenue. They just kind of – who wants to continue to be not in the playoffs and getting all the cable money and TV money or the concession money that you have from selling out the stadium. So, and because baseball it's not like, can you just draft a guy, or two or three guys, you know what I'm saying? You had to get, you know what I'm saying? They have to go through the system, the farm system or, you know what I mean? It's not like an overnight thing where you can get a Tim Duncan, LeBron James, Shaquille O'Neal to change your fortunes. You know what I'm saying? Baseball is a little more complicated. We know that, right? So, baseball teams are more built basically mostly in free agency, correct me if I'm wrong, if anything. So the contract, my personal opinion, might be kind of out of control, Brandon. But, you know, it is what you negotiate. We have players making guaranteed money, $256 million and up, guaranteed money, pitchers. And then they don't even play – both, you know what I'm saying? They don't even play both sides of the ball. They only play, that's all they do is pitch. So the owners are probably looking for some owners are probably looking for a little bit more money back from the players. And I'll be honest with you, some teams are probably looking, if that's negotiated, they probably looking to wait so they can get some more money back from being, you know what I'm saying, on a bottom feeder. You know what I mean? So I don't know, man. I would have thought Major League Baseball, because like we haven't even talked about, Brandon, like where are they going to play at? We still talking about if they're going to play. We ain't talking about where they're going to play at because, again, man, it's kind of weird. You can't just snap your fingers. I know baseball players don't have to be as conditioned as football players, basketball players, but they do have a spring, you know what I'm saying? They do have a spring regimen, spring training they go through, a process. So when we just say, oh, just play, let us know where we're going to play at, you know, I don't know. This doesn't bode well the thinking process is it's not all planned out. We're not on the same page. So, like, why are we really playing? It's like, ugh, why bother? You know what I'm saying? Now that we're down to 60 games, when we could have in March, but you know what I'm saying, the first week in April, we could have at least figured it out. You know what I'm saying? They don't even have a plan, Brandon, for testing. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's other hurdles they got to get through. They can't even get on the field.
Did you know?
Go ahead.
I think it's crazy that I would hope there's somebody inside Major League Baseball that's like, all right, well, we'll work on this while you guys do this, but I doubt it. You know, I doubt anybody's. It's crazy.
Yeah,
Sunday night, MLB Network documentary. We all love documentaries right now going on sport-wise. My favorite baseball player of all time, Ken Griffey Jr. There's a documentary called Junior on him. It's going to be a great one this Sunday night, 8 o'clock. If you don't have the network, watch it. Find it on YouTube. Griffey Jr. was – and he had a chance to break the home run record that year himself until he fell off there at the end of July. But Jr. was – he could play offense. He could play defense.
Yep.
He could speed. The kid, the Sultan of Swing, woo! He had it all, John. He was my favorite player. And when he came to the Reds, I loved it.
Yeah. You loved it? Why didn't that Seattle team? That Seattle team underachieved that he played with. They underachieved
that
for sure.
That Seattle team was so good. You had Edgar Martinez, Tino Martinez, Jay Buhner, Randy Johnson, Alex Cora, or was it Alex Cora or Joey Cora? I think it was Joey Cora. Griffey. Oh, my God. John, yeah. Why that team did not win more? John, they set the record. I think it got beaten recently, if I'm wrong. They set the record for most wins in a major league season. They had 115 or 116 game wins one season. It's crazy.
It came flat.
Man. By the way, have you seen the documentary on the Portland Trailblazers? They had one on them, Rip City.
Really? I had to check it out. You're enlightening me right now. I didn't know anything about it.
NBA TV. NBA TV had one. Recently called Rip City. I recorded it. Haven't watched it yet, but looks good. I think it was
Bill
the
– with Bill Walton?
No, I don't know if it was – well, I think it has a little bit of that, but I saw a lot of Clyde Drexler in it.
Okay.
So,
in
the preview. I'll send you the thing.
Cliff Robertson. Okay, cool.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That's going to be one to check out. NFL news, John. NFL news. Colts, they're going to announce they're going to add Robert Mathis to the Ring of Honor this year. Definitely, 100%, don't dispute it one single bit. Definitely
right.
Deserves it. It'll look good to see him up there. Hey, how happy are you, and you're a Colts fan, how happy and excited are you to hear that Philip Rivers has he said yesterday on his interview that he's already gotten down 80% of the playbook?
Well, that's good. That's great. Because when we were talking about Peyton Manning back in the day, that'd have been like duh, right? That'd have been like blinking. We should have been done that already, right? But that's great. What we are missing, everybody's missing, not just the Colts fan here. What we are missing is like that connection, that mini camp. That, you know what I'm saying? Whether guys come or not, or want to show up or not, that they have during the summer months. So that you can get that, you know what I'm saying, that workout in with your receivers, that, you know what I'm saying, that connection. That's what we kind of don't have right now. I know all these guys are professional. I know Phillip Rivers, he ain't necessarily moonwalking into the Hall of Fame, but he is a Hall of Famer, you know what I'm saying? So I don't necessarily doubt his ability or honestly, Brandon, any his ability to lead, to lead the locker room. But what we don't have, it's a lot of, like I said, we don't have a connection. We don't have him working out with T.Y. We don't have him working out with the or Jack Doyle or either. Doyle's been catching.
He is.
Thought.
Yeah.
But we haven't got, you know what I'm saying? Like the expectations from a Colts fan is not to be, you know, should be going for after you've had, you know what I'm saying, whether you hate it or not, all Andrew Luck was an all pro. You know what I'm saying? Caliber on his way to the Hall of Fame until he decided to retire. But you know what I'm saying? The Colts kind of expect great quarterback play, even going back to Peyton Manning. And I know somebody's checking me and said, well, you expect a great quarterback play out of Painter? You expect a great quarterback out of Colts? But you know what I'm saying? That's when it comes down to, you know, every team got to go through its lean years. You know what I'm saying? We know this, right? But when you find out the numbers, when somebody like Phillip Rivers comes in and he gets the big check to come in and kind of be a bridge for us, and because that's what it is. Because we have a good, mm-hmm. we have a good solid defense that Ballard believes that he has improved the secondary and improved through the draft, bringing in a receiver for the offense and improved through the draft when he traded for the kid from San Francisco. So you're looking at all that on paper. Of course, man, the Colts look good. They do, and the AFC South, I think, should. I know people are kind of, you know what I'm saying, want them to pencil them in for 12-4, but again, that would be good to pencil 12-4 or even, you know, some, well, we kind of said 11-5. That would be great, but we got to get on the field and get practicing because, like, that's what gets the connectivity, you know what I'm saying? That's what gets, you know what I mean, the practice, you know, that's what gets teams to the next level, playing in January, playing in February.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. Mm-hmm. Zeke Elliott, John. He is one of several Cowboys and Texan players that have COVID now. Words that several coaches want the league to delay the start until late fall because the second outbreak possibly.
I heard that. I kind of like two, you know what I'm saying, you take so many steps forward with these other leagues, you know what I'm saying, getting the restart and the positivity that they kind of bring, even with some of the noise and hurdles that's kind of going on, but it's still positive. And, you know what I'm saying, the NFL – they might need to come up with a contingency plan, Brandon, just in case they can't play all the games, and just because, or even if travel is restricted because of pockets of COVID-19. You know what I'm saying? That is alarming. It's not, and it's not necessarily because he's a star player alarming, but it is alarming that Zeke Elliott, you know what I'm saying, came down with COVID. It is alarming because, again, I don't know how. Again, I don't know how, you know what I'm saying, if you're a team and let's say your state is good, your state, right? Your state of Texas is good. Nobody but Florida's a hotbed. How can you go play the Dolphins? How can you go play Tampa Bay? How can you see what I'm saying? How can you go play, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I know they got their own jet and the, you know what I'm saying, logistics, but we still got to get off our own jet. We still got to go through the city, you know what I'm saying, interact with people, you know what I mean? They're going
to – society, yeah.
Yeah. So those are the kind of things, yep, I think about. So,
a couple things. The Raiders, new stadium that they've got, it's going to host the 2021 Pro Bowl. I know you're pumped for that since you're the only one that watches the Pro Bowl nowadays.
Wow. I'm all for it. Jack Brown.
Yeah, I know.
I'm all for
the
it.
Players are probably pissed. They don't go to Hawaii anymore. And then
Las Vegas.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on Roger Goodell coming out and saying that he encourages teams to sign Kaepernick now? And the Chargers actually have him on the emergency quarterback list for them.
I think it's great. I think it's great. And if Colin Kaepernick still got a little juice left in the tank, hopefully somebody better than the Chargers gives him a chance because I don't know about that offensive line. I don't.
Phil Rivers got killed.
I'm not trying to be like – I had to relate it back to sports, man, like for real. Like he's been on the shelf for too long, man. And like, dude, if you got any juice left in the tank, man, I get it that you want to play. And you know, football players are tough, but go out there and play with somebody that you can maybe potentially even a backup to get back to the Super Bowl. And shoot, Brandon, how big of a freaking message could you know Colin Kaepernick can make if he, you know what I'm saying, quarterback, you know what I'm saying, backup, whatever, but played on the team that got to the Super Bowl, you know what I mean, and won. So I don't know. That's just, you know. Yeah, I'm all for it, man. But if you got him, you have juice.
How weird did it look to see Tom Brady in that Buccaneers uniform when it finally came out?
Again, man, you know what? I know it was a lot of hype even coming out of my mouth, man, when he made the decision to leave Foxborough, man. Sometimes, man, when you leave the confines of home, man, even though you're taking all your stuff with you, it's never quite the same, man. So I think they might – If there's a no hiccup season, man, I think they might miss a little beat there. Just, you know what I'm saying? He signed for how many years with Tampa Bay? Two or three? I think it's two.
Yeah.
It might be three. It might be three. Anyway,
I think it's a three-year deal.
Yeah, he's thinking more than this year. So they might, you know, as far as like, you know, what, how the fine tuning of the offense, and you know what I'm saying, the defense was solid, so, but it was always on the field last year, so we don't know how solid it really can be, right? So it was weird to answer your question. You know, Gronkowski, he finally dropped the 24/7 belt from, you know what I'm saying, that he was running
finally
around with in WWE. But now he's got to put his real mental head on and play football. So, like, play, you know, I'm not saying, you know what I'm saying, you play in wrestling, but we all know that it's stage and, you know what I'm saying, and whatnot. But I don't know, Brandon. Like, he seems like, looking at my naked eye, like, he seems like he's being shaped. But again, man, like, is he ready to deal with the rigors of a football season, man? Time will tell, man. Time, and we'll see. But they got to get up. They got to get their practice in if they want to be successful. And that's everybody.
Yep. Switching gears over here to college football. The SEC, John, the last SEC school has said that they're planning on having students this fall in class. So all 14 teams, the SEC, have said they're going to have students in class, which means SEC football, barring anything else, should be there this fall when it comes back. So I know that's one thing we talked about. And I said I still think it's hard that they're going to get everything back. But maybe they will and change my mind.
Right.
But I think it's going to be hard. John, I don't know if you've seen it. And I take that back. I'm sure you've seen it. I don't know how much in depth you've looked at it. Mike Gundy, Oklahoma State head coach, football coach, been there for quite a bit. He's got a lot of infamous run-ins, I guess, you know, with the media. I'm a man. I'm 40. He's done that soundbite.
Yeah.
He's under the gun for that OAN shirt he wore. You know, it's some kind of very far.
Right.
I think it's
right.
Far left, pro Trump, all this,
no,
whatever,
right.
Not non,
right.
Whatever it is, right?
It's right.
But anyways, it's and then his running back Hubbard tweeted that the star running back, mind you, has the most rushing yards last season, and he's a sophomore. Tweeted he's not going to do anything with Oklahoma State until things change. Later on, then Gundy and Hubbard both posted a video agreeing to promote change in the program. Gundy said making some changes, he's going to plan on making changes after players speak out on his shirt that he didn't understand what injustices that program represented. Should he be fired, as everybody is calling for?
No, because he didn't need to have the biggest lawsuit, because I listened to a certain news channel that now – again, we know this particular news channel, it's not supportive of change, okay? Or it's viewed as that, okay? That particular news channel is not, you know what I mean, the OAN, it's kind of looked at as the voice of shut up and dribble. Even worse, because that's Fox News. This is not Fox News. It's looked upon from a black man's community, my community. I'm gonna keep it real, 100, as the voice of shut up and dribble, that type of voice, man. So, Mike Gundy being the leader of young men, majority of them black, right? In a football team, like, again, the university is like, well, he put the university in a conundrum, right? Conundrum, right? Because he wore his God given rights, you know what I'm saying? As United States citizens, you can do whatever you want to do. You can pray to whoever you want to pray for. You can listen to whatever you want to listen to, whether it's rap music, devil worship music, or Christian music, whatever you want to do, right? So,
right.
But you would expect a leader of men, right, whether he was black or white himself, a leader of youth, right, a leader of men, to be a little bit more open minded of the world, and knowing how things open minded of the world, period, and knowing that some things, and especially in this time, are sensitive, right? So his apologies came off very like dry and read from a teleprompter and whatnot. I don't think he should be fired for wearing a T-shirt. You know what I'm saying? He didn't wear a Nazi, you know what I'm saying, swastika T-shirt, right? He didn't wear a Klan outfit, right? But, the news T-shirt, right, you know what I'm saying? But, like, the apologies, that was university told, like, dude, you got to do this, otherwise you're going to lose your locker room. So,
yep.
In that regard, then the university, my personal opinion, just let the nature take its course. If guys want to transfer, the AD, you should maybe step in and do what he or she can to try to mend the fence. But if guys want to transfer, let them transfer, and then, you know, special, I mean, I know it's going to sound crazy, whether they be whomever, black or white, they get special, they can play automatic. And hell, it ain't even special. The guys do that now. Without any special treatment of it being for a Black Lives Matter or anything like that, just let them go ahead and transfer, and that there'll be. And then he'll have a losing season. Then the university will be okay. All right, we got to fire you now, dude, because you didn't win. But you can't win if you don't get. That's the truth. Everybody knows that. They listen to the show. Hopefully, you do. You can't win if you ain't got the players, right?
Right.
And you know. If he ain't got, you know what I'm saying, great players to play in that conference, I know people give it a, you call it, you know what I'm saying, he ain't beat Oklahoma, but like three times since he's been there in like this, 16 years, right? So I know we give that Big 12 conference a hard time, but they are a big time program. Oklahoma State is still a big time program. They always kind of fall in the middle of the pack. And play spoiler, you know, maybe not beat Oklahoma this year, or maybe not beat Texas this year, but they kind of beat whoever Texas was trying to chase or whatever. Some, you know, it's mm-hmm. always wacky and crazy in that particular conference anyway. But and he's responsible. He's a good coaching mind. He's put together, you know, saying some winning seasons, some memorable seasons. As you recall, you know, saying the rant when he went out, I'm 40. You know, what I'm saying, but unfortunately, Brandon, it seems like there's a disconnect. With the people that he's recruiting, so
right.
I mean, you know, saying he can't be fired for wearing a T-shirt, man. But you know, let nature take its course, and eventually it'll be all gone anyway. Because the guy, if it start running back, it's worth his salt. I guarantee you, somebody else will take him, and they'll kind of somebody else that's more understanding to take him, and whoever else is on the offensive lineman, quarterback, and online. Then you know, of course, they'll find players to fill those positions, but they won't be the guys that your first stringers. They won't be the guys that you really wanted on your team. And like I said, if you ain't got the goods to beat Texas or to play against Kansas or Baylor or any of those teams in the Big 12 Conference, you'll find your way unemployed. Naturally.
Yep. Absolutely. quick hitters. I've got just one left of my quick hitters. The TBT mm-hmm. tournament's going to be starting July 4th. So,
uh-oh.
Independence Day fireworks from home, TBD tournament, $1 million basketball tournament. Some notable teams in there, Purdue, Ohio State, and Syracuse teams. It's going to be a 24-team tournament. The Men of Mackey, that's Purdue's team, team name. The Men of Mackey is a 19 seed. If they win, they'll be playing Boeheim's Army from Syracuse. Some of the players for Purdue, Isaac Haas, Ryan Klein, Raphael Davis, John Octius, P.J. Thompson, Grady Eifert, Evan Boudreau, and Frank Gaines. And then head coach is going to be Ryan Smith, who also played during the Baby Boilers time period. But, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing this Men of Mackey team. Even if it's just one game, seeing Purdue play should be good. This also, John, is where the Elam rule came into effect initially, and the NBA used it for their All-Star game, and it worked well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you say Grady Eifert, man, I think about great shooting, man. So TBT kind of.
What about Ryan Klein?
I'll get into it, man. They got the shooters, man. So TBT has gained a lot of steam over the last several years, man. As far as like people, consuming it, and as real basketball. I think a lot of times people dismiss it as like a regular old summer league, but those guys be out there trying to win that purse, man. And there's a lot of alumni pride with the schools, man. So yeah, I'm ready. I'm anxious to see it myself.
Yeah, absolutely. It should be a good tournament starting July 4th. It'll be on ESPN. I think they're doing some games in Columbus, and I thought I saw Indianapolis. I don't know. Or their announcers are going to be in Indianapolis. One of the two. It's weird. Last thing I have, John, and I want you to talk a little bit more about it yourself, the last topic I have, but like I said, you might have seen if you follow our website, if you follow our Facebook page, our Twitter account, you download on Google Play or the iTunes Store our podcast and stuff, but a bonus episode podcast we decided to put up instead of on this show, put up from last night. John, you had a great interview with Craig Hodges, the former three-time NBA three-point champion, the former Chicago Bulls guard. That podcast is up on iTunes. It's also on the Crossroads Sports Facebook page. You can get it on our website. John, kind of talk a little bit about your interview that you had with Craig for our listeners here. Don't give in too much of it because we want them to go listen to it. But kind of talk about your reaction, a little bit about it, and then your reaction to your interview with him.
Right. So biggest thing with us on our show is trying to bring the best quality guests, best stories, whether it be from the golf world, basketball world, football, any world of sports, man. And as we all know, as we all saw the Last Dance, Michael Jordan, the story of the Chicago Bulls, that particular 90s team, right, a dynasty, Craig was kind of left out. And he was a pivotal part of the team, right, that the NBA has kind of blackballed. The NBA has kind of turned his back on in some regards as a player because he stood out and spoke out for different things. Actually wrote a letter and gave it to when the Bulls won a championship. Wrote a letter and presented it to the president of the United States, during that then president of the United States, George Bush, as he was shooting threes after threes. As he reminded us, he was telling me, I asked him, did he hit the last shot? That's kind of like, I asked him how many shots did he hit, and he said like 99 in a row or something like that, which I can believe because he's one of the all time great shooters of the NBA. Whether his stats are, you know what I'm saying, if you look at some of his stats, best season, or actually from a stat point of view, we're in Milwaukee. Yeah, but like a lot of times, man, people just automatically assume that he's a Chicago Bulls, and like that was the end of his story. You know what I mean? Or that they don't know that he actually was assistant coach with the Lakers when they went back to back with Kobe, and he actually had a pretty good relationship with Kobe Bryant. So certain things that we kind of pulled out, we did talk about. You know what I'm saying? His family's mother was a civil rights advocate during her time. That's what kind of fuels his fire for speaking out against social injustice and things that happened in his community that aren't right. So he gave up a lot. He sacrificed a lot. You know what I'm saying? For voicing his opinion. But he kind of made his way back into coaching. Coached, had some just other stops at various colleges and whatnot. And like I said, he did make his way back into the NBA underneath Phil Jackson and Tex Winter out in Los Angeles with the Lakers when they were 2009, 2010. So, man, I encourage everybody to listen to it. It ain't just me, you know what I'm saying, gushing like a fanboy or anything like that. It's a very real, raw conversation about his life and career.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to commend you. That was a great interview, very professionally done. And, you know, I was shocked when you told me, hey, boom, I saw the email. Hodges is good. And I do want to thank his reps as well for allowing us to do that interview. I know I wasn't there and I couldn't be there, but I thought you handled it very well. And you represented Crossroads Sports great with it. And, get a chance, listen to it. It's about a 35-minute interview. But yeah, it was a great one. And, if this company, this Crossroads Sports, man, it just keeps building and building. And, right. We keep getting great guests. Craig Hodges, we got Coach Mike Fleck, Ball State Golf. So yeah, we'll continue to keep, bringing you guys the product and, we'll be working hard for that. So, I do want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. If you listen to the podcast, thank you for downloading. Please share it on the Facebook page, share it to anywhere you can, like it, subscribe, share. I think that's the three things everybody says you need to be talking about doing. I want to thank Ball State University. I want to thank Mike Fleck for joining us today. It was a great conversation with him, a real cool dude. And I'm looking forward to seeing him and meeting him in person when we go up there to Ball State here soon, once we get some free time to be able to do that. John, I'll let you kind of do your closing remarks and then send us out.
I got you. Only thing I got to close with, man, Kevin Love's winning the ESPY this weekend. He's winning the Arthur Ashe Courage Award for, you know what I'm saying, his efforts to be a spokesperson for mental health and wellness in this country, man. I know a lot of times Kevin Love seems like be a butt of a joke, right, or for afterthought, because, like, now LeBron's gone and everybody else is gone. Like, he's still playing in Cleveland, right? But no, man, he's actually winning a pretty prestigious, a pretty important award to bring, to shed light on you know what I'm saying, something that, again, sometimes people sweep under the rug, mental health, you know what I mean? And then the Knicks, Brandon, are still looking for a coach.
Uh-oh.
They're bringing in, I don't know if you remember Udoka, who used to play for the Spurs. He played for the Knicks back in 2000,
no.
back in 06 too, but Udoka was like, he's one of them key role players. You know how popular he used to find them guys, tweener guys like him and, oh my God, he had another guy, but he's like a tweener guy, like small forward, power forward guy.
Tiago Splitter?
Well, Splitter, no, not that guy. But no, man, Udoka's from the Spurs family tree, and like right now he's just
okay.
with the 76ers, man, and like they're trying to. He's obviously, you know what I'm saying, African American, younger candidate. If the Knicks hire him, they're obviously, like I said, he's from the Spurs family tree, right? He actually won a championship with the Spurs in 2014. So he's a good hire. But the Knicks, if they hire him, they need to get out of the way and kind of let him, you know what I'm saying, build the team up and guide the guys that got on that team. So that way, because like right now, you know, Kevin Durant and whoever else, they trying to recruit the free agency wise to turn that franchise around, it ain't going to happen. So it kind of got to happen from on top. I think Udoka would be a pretty good start, my personal opinion. But outside of that, Brandon, man, we had a great show today. I hope everybody, you know what I'm saying, listens to this one as well. With Coach Fleck and what he's bringing and what he's brought, continue to bring for you know what I'm saying, as it pertains to Ball State golf, man. As we know, golf is gaining a fandom, you know what I'm saying, day by day. So it was good to connect with him. It was good to connect with Coach Hodges the other night. And like I said, man, we keep on doing our best, man. And I appreciate everybody and thanks for listening.
Crossroads Sports.